and welcome to the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and thank you very much for joining me here on the show. It's been quite a while since I've done a show, way too long, and as tempted as I am, as you could probably imagine, to talk about the developments in the NHL, particularly today, as I record this on Wednesday, February 25th, given the word that just came out about an hour ago about Patrick Kane's injury, I will not do that, A, because that's not the plan for this show, and B, because I don't want to cry. So, with that out of the way, really what this edition of the show is something that I actually talked about way back in the first couple episodes back in September or October of the season, which was that I wanted to do some shows specifically focused on international hockey and even more laser specifically focused on the Continental Hockey League. I guess really for me what's happened since then is that I've been watching a heck of a lot of KHL. Two games a week that are being shown live on One World Sports, and then also continuing as I have over the last several seasons keeping up with the KHL via the individual game highlights that they have on their YouTube page, and then the English language daily KHL update package, which I highly recommend checking out as well. I guess going back a little bit further, I started getting interested in the KHL, I guess a bit more specifically during the last lockout, to the point where I actually started watching the daily updates and trying to really get a handle on what was going on in the league in general. I know a lot of the talk about the KHL, particularly North America, usually centers around A, financial trouble, or B, you know, Puck Daddy posts where it's, oh, look, this guy got the sleeve of his jersey stuck in the boards, or, oh, this ref got knocked down, tee-hee-hee, that's funny. That's really not what this show's going to be. The KHL is not the NHL. I don't think anyone would argue that. I don't think the KHL, well, some people in the KHL might, but I don't think anybody would really argue that the KHL is the NHL or that the KHL is the number one league in the world. It pretty clearly, I guess some people would make an argument and probably have some merit for the Swedish Hockey League, but it's pretty clearly the second best league in the world. And there is value to watching the games. There is value to watching the hockey. It's, to me, it's refreshing. In the sense that, A, it's hockey that's not played on an incredibly claustrophobic ice surface. The way North American hockey is played, you've got the larger ice surface, the wider ice surface. You've got, well, obviously every game is not a barn burner. You've got quite a few teams, and I guess just a bit more of the philosophy in general, that it doesn't stifle creativity as much. If you read the beautifully written Igor Larionov article several days ago, I guess now as I record this, for the Players Tribune website, he really nailed it perfectly. He talked about how, while there are incredibly talented players in the NHL, no one would argue that, and there are several, you know, there are some players who their creativity is able to shine through, as he mentioned, whether that be a Taves, a Kane, a Crosby, if you're talking younger players, a Johnny Gaudreau. So often, whether it be players growing up, whether it be players getting in the AHL or players getting into the NHL, so much of that creativity is stifled and, I guess metaphorically, beaten out of players by the way they're taught to play. That systems play basically rules the day in North America, which obviously it works, as Igor Larionov said in his article. It's easier to destroy than it is to create, but the shame of that is that incredibly talented, artistic, I guess if you want to call it that, players, either they have to, you know, we always hear keep it simple, either they have to simplify the game, so their game so much that really they then just end up like every other player that's out there, but they're not as big, or they're not as mean, not as tough, and so they sort of get filtered out of the league, even though they have something to offer. And Larionov gave the great example of a guy that I'm sure we'll mention a little bit later on the program as we run through the playoff matchups, Sergei Mozeykin, who is the all-time leading goal scorer in the seven-year history of the KHL. Arguably, I guess if you want to say Ilya Kovalchuk is the biggest star, and he probably is because, you know, going to the NHL and coming back, but if you want to call it a homegrown star that hasn't left, Sergei Mozeykin is probably the biggest star in the KHL and is a guy who, because the style of game that he plays, it's not necessarily one that instantly meshes with what's thought of in North America as quote-unquote playing the game the right way and all those old saws, he's never gotten his opportunity. And it was Igor Larionov's point in that article that there's probably five or six, as he put it, Pavel Datsyuks that just have never had their chance. And he sort of laid out how Pavel Datsyuk was very lucky that that he ended up with an organization like Detroit that didn't punish him for trying things, for being creative, and for playing his game. And obviously, as a result, he not only is one of the most dynamic offensive players in the game, but is also a very strong case could be made that he's the best two-way player in the game. So just a really interesting take, and I guess sort of a roundabout way to circle back to why I enjoy watching the KHL, and that it's different hockey. I know I've said, I believe it's been on here, or maybe it's been elsewhere, that I think that the talent gap from forwards in the KHL to forwards in the NHL is more narrow, I think, than the talent gap for defensemen in the two leagues. But again, it's such a different game that it's, I mean, you can, obviously, you can pick out certain guys and say, oh, well, you know, this guy or that guy came to the NHL and they just didn't pan out and they had to go back. But then, and I know I've made this point on this show before, you look at guys, very good NHL players, guys like Pekka Rinne, obviously 1A, you know, as the best goal in the NHL, went over to the KHL in the lockout and was horrid. He was not good at all. Zdeno Chara, maybe the most dominant defenseman of the last decade in the NHL. Everybody talks about how maybe this year or last year he started to look slow, or a little bit slower anyway, and guys were turning the corner on him. Well, in the KHL, that was a couple of years earlier that started to happen. He was, you know, the extra ice, the, you know, more emphasis on skill and speed. Guys could get around him. Evander Kane, obviously a much maligned guy in some circles, but as far as on ice, an incredibly talented guy, he was completely ineffective during his brief stint in the KHL during the lockout. So it all goes is just to say that it's really, I mean, it's obviously professional hockey either way, whether it's the NHL or the KHL, but it's a very different game. I find it very entertaining, though, and I think you know, it's aesthetically entertaining as well. You've got, in the NHL, every rink, every arena is, you know, unless you're actually in them and you're seeing, you know, oh, the different concourses, all that sort of thing. I mean, from a television watching viewpoint, every arena basically looks exactly the same in the NHL, whereas in the KHL, it's pretty interesting or entertaining visually in the sense that you've got some arenas that are very old, very, very old, that look as though they do not have any of the modern amenities, you know, and then you've got very new arenas, or at least very modern arenas, like the arena that Scott St. Petersburg plays in, that holds 12 or 13,000 people, and, you know, at first glance, okay, that looks like one of the, you know, you watch the broadcast on TV and it almost looks like one of the cookie-cutter NHL arenas. So, that's all just a preface to say that I do think it is a league worth watching. I really think that if you're a hardcore hockey fan, or even more so, if you're someone that's in the game of hockey, whether that be you know, front office, broadcasting, blogging, podcasting, I really think that it's I really think you're doing yourself a disservice if you close your mind off to anything that isn't NHL or even anything that isn't North American professional hockey. And so, I don't know, with more access this year, that's something that I've certainly been able to open up to and get a lot of enjoyment out of. So I guess with that, we'll actually get into talking about the KHL season a little bit. To me, from what I've watched and everything that I've paid attention to, and I think just through common sense, if you look at all the numbers, the team, as the season wore on, that was absolutely dominant was CSKA. This is a team that obviously a historic team in Russia and a team that was completely dominant. You look at their goal differential and it's completely absurd. 207 goals for in 60 games, only 98 goals against in 60 games. Quick math tells me that's a plus 109 in goal differential, which is, again, I don't have access to the historical records, whether it be of the NHL, whether it be of the KHL, whether it be of the KHL's predecessors or any other league sitting here in front of me. But just going by memory and what I've seen from the relatively long time that I've been watching hockey as a 34-year-old guy, I don't recall seeing a team this dominant on both ends of the puck. They were only 3 goals off the overall scoring lead. The overall goal scoring lead. Scott scored 210, but gave up 136. So yeah, you look at the next closest team as far as goals against, was Akbar's, not surprisingly, the Eastern Conference regular season champion. They finished the season with 115 goals against, but again, only 169 goals for. So, completely dominant season, and like I said, you just don't see that often where a team is able to be that offensively dynamic and combine that with just stifling defense, great goaltending, obviously names that that the average fan would know about, as far as I should say the average North American fan. Obviously, Alexander Radulov is he's everything that you imagine him to be and more. He leads the league in points and also leads the league in penalty minutes. He is completely insane. If you think that you've seen the insanity of Alexander Radulov in the NHL, that's not even the half of it. I can recall one game in particular that I was watching where he got a penalty. He was upset, which that's every single penalty that he takes, but he got a penalty, flipped out, would not go in the penalty box. The refs finally got him to go in the penalty box. He grabbed his stick and pretty much swung it at the penalty box attendant, at least aggressively moved his stick toward the penalty box attendant. It was not, it was, even though he didn't strike the person, it was not an accident, and then continued to berate her for the entirety of his penalty. It was obviously, quite frankly, pretty disgusting. And it also was, it was Alexander Radulov. I can't figure the guy out other than he's insane and apparently a jerk and also supremely talented. So I don't know, It will be very interesting to see how he carries through in the playoffs if he's able to keep himself in check, because you look up and down the lineup and you look at what they've done throughout the season, and it's hard to imagine that there's too many things that could get them off the rails in the playoffs, but penalty trouble could be one of them. Really the top line, and their top line all year when Radulov hasn't been hurt or suspended, is the line with former Ottawa Senator Stéphane DeCosta. The native of France has had a fantastic season as well, along with Igor Grigorenko. So offensively, quite a bit runs through them. Another noteworthy player on the team is Simon Jalmerson, who, if you recall, was signed by the Columbus Blue Jackets in the NHL offseason. It was actually a fairly sought-after free agent. Signed with them, didn't make the team out of camp, and pretty quickly left. He bolted. He did not want to go down to Springfield of the AHL. And obviously anybody who's been following hockey knows the story thereafter. The insane hundreds upon hundreds of man games that Columbus lost. This is a guy that clearly would have gotten his opportunity if he wouldn't have stuck around, or if he would have stuck around. He didn't. He went to Sedska and has played very well and just adds to their depth. So it will be very interesting to see going forward. They play Sochi in the first round. Sochi is a team that had a terrible start to the year. They are an expansion team and they looked every bit the part of an expansion team starting the season. But they really rallied as the season went along. Again, an expansion team that has... it's very interesting as you go up and down these rosters. There's some teams that are almost completely Russian, obviously, you get to some of the other teams that are located in other countries. They're very heavily populated by players from their native countries. And then you've got some teams that are sort of all over the map. Again, this is a predominantly Russian team. You've got Igor Radulov, Alex Radulov's brother. They actually, in a game just a couple of days before the end of the season, they actually scored only seconds apart from each other for their respective teams, which was fairly entertaining. But Andrei Kostitsyn plays for Sochi, former Red Wing Corey Emerton, and maybe most notably, as far as import players, Ryan Whitney, who has not had a bad season there. I don't know. I have a real hard time seeing any way that Sedska doesn't win. Obviously, it's the playoffs. Anything can happen. We've seen in recent years, I believe, actually, yeah, last year, Lokomotiv make it very far in the playoffs as an eighth seed. So anything can happen, but you just look at the numbers. Again, Sedska plus 109 in goal differential. HC Sochi minus 6 in goal differential. They scored 164 goals, which isn't terrible when you line that up with the rest of the league, but they gave up 170. They gave up 72 more goals than Sedska. And yes, part of that is skewed by how rough their start was, but still, this really the 1-8 matchups in both conferences are by far the biggest mismatches. But yeah, I have a hard time not taking Sedska in this matchup. I think it would be insane not to pick them. I really think you'd have to pretty much be creating a tangible reason to do anything other than pick them, and probably pick them in 4 or 5 games. The 2-7 matchup in the Western Conference is really, you could say, the other powerhouse, specifically in the Western Conference, SKA. That is the team that plays out of St. Petersburg, Russia. The much ballyhooed Ilya Kovalchuk is their star, although, if you've been watching the league this year, the real, I mean, I shouldn't say the real Southern team. Kovalchuk's had a good year in some ways, but the star of the team is Artemi Panarin, who is injured right now, and from everything I can gather, will not be available at least for the first round of the playoffs, which is bad for them, very bad for them. And it's also, I don't know, the similarities between Artemi Panarin and Patrick Kane seem to never end. They look exactly the same. Panarin plays a very Patrick Kane style of hockey. And they are both injured and will both miss some playoff time for their respective teams. But no, Artemi Panarin is a guy who has been dominant this year. He's a guy who there is a lot of NHL interest in. And it will be very interesting to see if Scott is able to get far enough in the playoffs for him to be able to make an impact and be able to find his way find his way into the playoffs. I mean, you look at his stats this year, and again, an absolutely fantastic player. Fifth overall in points, 26 goals, 36 assists, so 62 points in 54 games, in only averaging just under 16 minutes of ice time. That's maybe the most impressive aspect of his season. Fifth overall in goals as well. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to the thing that Sky has going for them is that they're a very deep team. They've been a lot less consistent in the second half of the season than they were in the first. They went on, I believe it was a 20-game unbeaten streak to start the season, very reminiscent, in some ways very reminiscent of the Chicago Blackhawks' 24-game unbeaten streak several years ago in the NHL, but also not all that reminiscent in the sense that they were blowing teams out. They were absolutely dominating teams. I mean, there were games where they were winning 6-1, 7-2, 8-2, 9-2. It was complete domination. They weren't playing a whole lot of one-goal games, and as at least my read on it, as injuries took place throughout the year and the goal scoring dried up a little bit and some of the defensive issues cropped up, that the record started to go south. I mean, it was probably close to halfway through the season when they were leading the league points-wise, and He's went off the rails a little bit, but they were able to still finish second in the league, tied in points with Dynamo Moscow, but one more regulation win, so that's what put them into the 2-7 matchup with Torpedo. Other noteworthy players on SKA. This is one of the biggest money teams in the league, and it shows when you look at their roster. Guys who have recently been in the NHL, who were KHL players and recently returned, Anton Belov, former of the Oilers, Roman Cervenka, formerly of the Calgary Flames. You've got guys who are at former NHL draft picks, guys like Evgeny Dodonov. You've got Jimmy Erickson, who played for the Swedish Olympic team. Current goaltender Mikko Koskinen, formerly of the Islanders system, who was traded for Alexander Salak, and we'll get to Sabir a little bit later, but that's a trade that actually worked out well for both teams. Both goalies have been very good. Obviously, you can't talk about Sky, and you really can't talk much about the KHL without talking about Ilya Kovalchuk. It's been an interesting season for him, I'll say. Again, I mean, still a point per game player, 54 points or 55 points in 54 games, 25 goals, 30 assists. But the majority, I would say, if I can remember back, 17 or 18 of those goals took place in the first 30 to 35 games of the season that he played. So he definitely tailed off. He had a wrist injury, and to me, when he came back from the wrist injury, I have a hard time believing that he's 100% healthy, and maybe I'm completely off base on that, but Ilya Kovalchuk is a guy who certainly has never—he's never been shy about shooting the puck ever. And it seemed like even though he was shooting the puck maybe more than ever before his injury, since he came back, there were several games where he didn't have a shot on goal, even though he was getting a ton of ice time. He's a guy who, as a forward, and again, this was happening in the NHL as well, as a forward gets more ice time than most. He's always up there around the 20-minute mark, and for him to have multiple games, sometimes several games in a row without a shot on goal, to me leads me to believe that there's at least there were some lingering physical issues. But obviously, with Panarin out, it's paramount that Kovalchuk is able to find his form. Granted, their first round opponent is certainly not one of I would not call them one of the powerhouses of the league. They finished with 90 points, just 5 points ahead of Atlanta. Again, in seventh, just ahead of Sochi. Only plus +9 in goal differential. Again, I wouldn't rule anything out just because SKA is such a mercurial team. They're up and down. They look great. It seems like it's feast or famine with them. They either look great or they look awful. They've been a team that has not found playoff success in the Gagarin Cup playoffs really since the KHL started. So, it's hard to, in one sense, just purely looking at the numbers, it's hard to say that Torpedo has a chance. But it's also you could see how the series could get interesting. Some of the more noteworthy players on the team, Daniil Zharkov, Wojtek Volski, the former NHLer who is plying his trade for Torpedo right now. So, an interesting series, but I have a real, real hard time seeing any way that Torpedo wins unless SKA just completely implodes. Also, Nikita Filatov, Jarkko Immonen, and a couple of other noteworthy players on Torpedo as well. Now we sort of move into in the conference, a couple of the more interesting, the more competitive matchups, I guess you could say, the 3-6 and the 4-5 matchups. Dynamo Moscow, who again just barely missed out getting the second seed, also finishing with 123 points against Lokomotiv, who were a big surprise team last year, and a team that, to me, just looking at it on paper, again, you wouldn't necessarily... You wouldn't necessarily put them right at the top with some of the other, you know, the four or five major powerhouse teams necessarily, but they're a dangerous team. They're a team that made a coaching change. They brought back Dave King, who had previously been their coach before. Obviously, everyone remembers the tragic plane crash several years ago that claimed the lives of the entire team. They've rebuilt. They have an incredible fan base, and they've rebuilt a team that is competitive. Again, they're a team that didn't have a great regular season. They didn't have a terrible regular season, but they added several noteworthy players as the season went along. A couple of players with NHL experience, Petri Kontiola from Finland, who came over, tried to make the Toronto Maple Leafs. It didn't work out for him. He got injured early in the season, and never really was able to crack the lineup. Played for the Marlies for a while, and then the contract was terminated. He was a free agent, and Lokomotiv signed him, as well as Andrei Loktionov, who played for several NHL teams in recent years. They're just a really solid team. I mean, you look up and down their lineup, and again, not only just former NHL players, but guys like Emil Galimov, Stefan Kronwall, the brother, the younger brother of Nicholas Cronwell. Sorry for the Red Wings brain cramp. I try to block the Red Wings out of my mind as much as possible. And then you've got again, this is a fairly international roster compared to some of the other teams in the league. Martin Thornburg, you've got Curtis Sandford as one of the goaltenders. Yuri Novotny from the Czech Republic, Jeff Platt, who has dual citizenship and represents Belarus. So a tough team, certainly a team that has a chance to win the series. And you've got Dynamo Moscow, who to me is like, I don't know, I don't view them, or I don't, from what I've seen of them this year, I don't put them right at the top of the list necessarily, with some of the other the elite teams, whether it be a CSKA, a SKA, an Akbars, or even a Metallurg, Metallurg Magnitogorsk, the defending Gagarin Cup champions. To me, they're right on that. They're right on that next level. You've got they've got good goaltending. You look again at their goal differential, and really, goal differential wise, or you get outside of SKA and CSKA, they are maybe again right up there with the top teams in the East as the one of the best teams, a +52 goal differential, great goaltending, and a team that from what I saw at least didn't seem to have any massive dips throughout the season, and they're a team that you talk about the very good goaltending. It's been several very good goaltenders. Obviously, Alexander Yeryomenko is their most well-known goaltender. But you look statistically, as I pull the goaltending stats up here, and Alexander Lyushkin leads the league in save percentage, 94.6 save percentage, 1.45 goals against. And it's not like he's played every game by any stretch, but 21 games played, that's more than a third of a season. That's not exactly it's not a horrifically small sample size. He's a guy who is able to get the job done, so they're fine there. They don't necessarily have the guys. Some of the other, you look at the other top teams, whether it be CSKA, whether it be SKA, Metallurg Magnitogorsk, they've got guys who are at the top of the point charts. It definitely is not the case with Dynamo Moscow, but they've got guys, they've got solid players. It's not as if they're a barren team offensively, and that's borne out by the offensive numbers. If I had to make a choice, I would go with Dynamo Moscow. I think they're deeper. I think the goaltending is more reliable. That's been one of the up and down issues with the Lokomotiv, whether it be Curtis Sandford or their other goaltenders, that has kept Lokomotiv from being consistent enough to make that run at home ice advantage in the first round. So, if I had to make a choice, if I had to pick, I would go with Dynamo Moscow. That brings us to the 4-5 matchup, which to me is maybe the best matchup. I think really the I think the 4-5 in the West, and we'll get to the 3-6 matchup in the East. I think those might be the most competitive first round matchups. Fourth in the conference, Jokerit, who, if you're hearing that name and you're thinking, that doesn't sound like a KHL team. I feel like I've heard of that team before. It's a team from Finland. They've sent along a lot of guys to the NHL. Most notably, well, not most notably, but most recently and most currently, probably the top prospects for two of the most storied teams in the NHL, Timo Polkanen for the Detroit Red Wings and Teuvo Teravainen for the Chicago Blackhawks, very recently played for Jokerit. They, the team and their arena were bought out by Russian businessmen, and as a result, the team moved from the Liiga in Finland to the KHL, which is fascinating. It's I would be really interested to find out what their fans think of the move, in the sense that, I mean, just think of you, you're a fan of your team, a storied team, in the NHL, if you're an NHL fan. You know, let's say the for my money, let's say the Blackhawks. Let's say the Blackhawks. And again, this is all hypothetical and obviously it would never happen, but let's say the Blackhawks got bought, the United Center gets bought, and they get moved to the KHL. Okay, you still got your team, that's great, but all of a sudden you have no natural rivals, no rivalries that you've had for decades. Unless you are a hardcore fan of the other league, you will not really have known any of the players coming into it. You won't be familiar with the teams. I could see how that would be jarring for fans, but from all of the games of theirs that I've seen and all the highlights that I've seen, Hartwall Arena has been full. It seems as though fans have at least responded by still being very interested in their team. I don't know if there's necessarily if them being in the KHL has spawned, you know, a ton of fans in Helsinki that are, you know, watching a ton of other KHL games. I would have no idea, but they certainly are at least into the team. And it has been interesting to see as the season's gone along that rivalries have developed. I think most notably SKA. Several games this year that they played against each other were very heated. The Jokerit fans particularly had fun getting on Ilya Kovalchuk. So it's been interesting to see how that's developed. They're a team that's led somewhat improbably, I guess most people would say, by Steve Moses, or as I remember him, Stevie Moses, who played college hockey, and I believe it was 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, was a free agent invite to the Chicago Blackhawks prospect camp and lit up the prospect camp, but was not offered a contract. And continued on with his career, played several years for Jokerit in the Liiga, and stayed on with the team as they went into the KHL and led the league in goal scoring. Not only led the league in goal scoring, but set the single season record for goal scoring for the entire league, which is, again, kind of amazing for a guy who's very offensively talented, but didn't necessarily. He's never really put up this level of numbers. He played all 60 games and scored 36 goals. 36 goals, 21 assists, so just under a point per game. And again, much like Artemi Panarin, he did this playing not first-line minutes. He played the majority of the season on the third line. I guess technically the third line. You can make an argument that it really wasn't the third line. It was really, by all measures, the most effective line. Former Edmonton Oiler Linus Omark and Peter Kukal have been the line that's really done most of the scoring, has been the big line for Jokerit. Ryan Gunderson on the back end, an all-star as well from the United States. Nicholas Hagman, the captain, one of the leaders on the team, at least one of the captains. And you know, it's an older team in a lot of ways. It's a team that really was, for the longest time, keeping pace or close to keeping pace with Scott and Sedska. They dropped off a little bit towards the end of the season. Goaltending, I just personally, for me, I'm not overly sold on their goaltending. Riikku Helenius is a guy who came through the Tampa Bay system. He's been okay For Jokerit, and the guy who I guess you could say has been the starting goalie for the majority of the season, Henrik Karlsson is a guy that I watched him play the majority or a good portion of a couple seasons ago for Rockford in the American Hockey League, the Chicago Blackhawks affiliate, and it was rough. He's been better for Jokerit than he was for Rockford. 92 save percentage, 2.1 goals against. So it's not like he's had a bad year by any stretch, but I watch him and I worry. But I mean, outside of that, it's a very solid team. I wouldn't be shocked if they go far. I mean, they are playing another very solid team though in Dynamo Minsk. This is another team. This is obviously Minsk, Belarus. So the national makeup of this team is dramatically different from a lot of the other teams in the league. Really, the series. I mean, you've got Jokerit, which is significantly populated by Finnish players, several Swedish players. Obviously, we mentioned Steve Moses, several North American players, but no Russians on the team. And then you look at Minsk, and they have all of two Russians. Alexei Kaluzny, who's a significant player on the team, would be one of the two. But you look at the rest of the team, almost exclusively Belarusians, but you also have some pretty prominent, pretty high-profile North American players. And Nick Bahlin, defenseman who represented the team in the All-Star game. You've got Jonathan Chychu, who former scoring leader in the NHL, who has gone on to be a very prominent player in the KHL. Maybe not as good of a year this year as he's had in previous years. Still, certainly a threat. Certainly a good player. 48 points in 49 games is nothing to sneeze at. 24 goals and 24 assists. So he wasn't necessarily right up at the top of the goal scoring, but definitely still an impressive player. You also have Matt Ellison, who is a very effective KHL player, but his claim to fame will always be, to me, the player that the Chicago Blackhawks traded to acquire Patrick Sharp 10 years ago. But a very solid player in this league for this team. You've also got Lukáš Krajíček from the Czech Republic, Paul Stachura. From Canada, so it's an interesting mix of players. And Charles Lindgren, who I believe is Canadian, he's definitely North American, but has dual citizenship for Belarus, is one of their best players. One of their top scorers. So it's to me this series is a toss-up. I think if you played the series out, a seven-game series out six, 10 times, I think maybe Jokerit would win 6 times, would win the series 6 times, and Dynamo Minsk could win 4. It's tough. I will go with Jokerit. I just have a hard time picking against them. But again, I think this is a very, very close series. This was a series that would surprise me almost if it doesn't go the full 6 or 7 games. So that wraps up the Western Conference. We will now take a relatively quick look at the Eastern Conference as we're deeper into the show than I usually go time-wise. So we will do that now. All right, and off we go with the Eastern Conference playoff preview here. Probably be a little bit quicker just in the interest of time, but I don't want to not give the appropriate attention to these series because the Eastern Conference in some ways was more wide open than the Western Conference as far as the race. It certainly went down to the wire more than the Western Conference did, but as I briefly mentioned earlier, the class of the field in the Eastern Conference was Akbars Kazan, one of the more successful teams in KHL history, previous Gagarin Cup champions, and just a very well-rounded team, an interesting team in that it is a It's a team that has a fairly good mix of both, I guess, if you're not a KHL fan, players that you'd be familiar with, as well as some pretty high-end players that that are, I guess you could say, KHL exclusive. And that also includes guys who are not Russian. Justin Acevedo is the perfect example of a guy who's had a very good KHL career from Canada, but is probably a guy that most people outside of Russia or outside of the KHL don't really know a whole lot about. He's a forward, a playmaker, 50 points in 58 games. Still a relatively young guy, born in 88. So you've got him. You've got Alexander Burmistrov, who the rights to Alexander Burmistrov are still owned by the Winnipeg Jets, and he actually right now, as I record this, is the subject of some trade rumors, which is interesting, given that he is not a guy who will even be available, you would think, for the season, given what Akbars is likely to do in the playoffs. But you've got a guy like him, Sergei Kostitsyn, who I don't know. Sergei Kostitsyn is Sergei Kostitsyn. That's the best I can really say about him. He a maddening player in a lot of ways. You've got one of the best defensemen in the KHL, Ilya Nikulin, who, again, as I talked about, a guy who's a star in the KHL that other people might not necessarily know about if you don't follow the league, but a very, very good player. And you've got Anders Nilsson in goal, the Swede, who is Chicago Blackhawks property, was one of the players that was acquired in the Nick Leddy trade, or the rights to him were at least acquired. And he's had an absolutely fantastic season, third in the KHL in goals against. 1.71 goals against, 93.6 save percentage, 20 regulation wins in 38 games. So goaltending is definitely not a problem for Akbars. Again, I know I mentioned earlier, but if we pull up the goal differential, which the reason I mentioned that is that I think the further we go along, and at least as far as I've been able to find, they're not expansive, advanced, or I guess as NHL.com would like to call them, enhanced stats for the KHL that I've seen at least. But goal differential, we've seen in the past, is something that at the NHL level is a fairly good predictor, a fairly strong predictor of playoff success. And they're a team, again, that had a very solid goal differential. And you look at the playoffs in any league, as important as offense is, defense is very important, and this is a team that gave up the second fewest goals in the KHL, only 115 goals against, and a respectable 169 goals for. So you contrast that with their opponent, Ahtomo Bleist, who they're a better team than they have been. I mentioned earlier how the KHL, unfortunately, a lot of times it's a league that North America kind of only gets the curiosity factor sort of attention, just when something weird happens, that's when the league gets attention. And for many years, this was a team that was at the center of that. Ahtomo Bleist was a team that just really, I guess, you'd hear about them because you'd always hear that they were in financial trouble. You'd hear, you'd see stories where they'd talk about, Ska or whoever else, they're spending tens and tens of millions of dollars, and then here's Ahtomo Bleist, who has like a $5 million payroll. And they're a team that has turned out a lot of really good players, but has a hard time, and it's had a hard time, keeping players. You look team statistically wise, this is a team that does not score goals. This is a team that, of all the teams in either conference, is the lowest scoring team. Only 134 goals in 60 games, so just barely over two goals a game for a team that made the playoffs. Minus 13 goal differential, and really, when you look at league leaders in pretty much every category, this is not a team that That really, outside of well, the one thing they do have, and this is the reason that they're made it as far as they have, and that they're in the playoffs, is goaltending. Jakub Kovar, 8 shutouts, led the league in shutouts, and he played 60 games in a 60-game schedule. I almost find that impossible to believe as I look at this, but that is in fact what it says. I knew we played quite a few games, but as I look at this, that just seems impossible to believe. But he played 60 games this season. So one would imagine he will get all the starts in the playoffs as well, and he is one of the better goalies in the league. So they have that. He clearly is a guy that is able to win games on his own. So one would think that is the chance. I just still that all that being said, I have a real hard time believing that Eftimo Blist has the offense to be able to defeat Akbar's, particularly when Akbar's defense and goaltending with Anders Nilsson is as good as it is. So yeah, I think I'd be very surprised if we see an upset there. A very interesting match, the matchup, the 2-7 matchup. Sibir Novosibirsk, based out of Siberia, has to be the biggest surprise in the league, finishing second in the Eastern Conference, really point total-wise third in the East, but they won their division, so they are second. And to me, I mean, you look at goals for 176 and goals against only 125, and that's particularly when they got Alexander Salak, the goals against dropped dramatically. My read on this team, and I hate to do NHL comparisons, but my read on this team is that if there was, and I guess it wouldn't be all that difficult to calculate, PDO, which is basically save percentage, you're combining save percentage and shooting percentage to really determine what their level of luck is. And this is a team that, to me, from everything I've seen, they're a high PDO team. And much like Colorado Avalanche last year, I don't know. It will be very interesting to see how this carries through the playoffs. They are a team, like I said, that goaltending-wise is led by Alexander Salak. And beyond that, I mean, there really is not a ton going on. I mean, as far as massive offensive players, one noteworthy guy is the big Swedish defenseman Patrick Hersley, who won the hardest shot competition in the All-Star game, and I believe it was 105.5. If I'm not mistaken, which was ridiculous, and I know there's actually been some NHL interest as well. I guess from a this is a hyper selfish interest in that this is a team that has two former Rockford Ice Hogs. Alexander Salak, who I mentioned, was acquired from SKS or from SKA St. Petersburg earlier this season and has been fantastic, and also takes great pictures with the terrifying severe snowman mascot. You have to check that out. And then also Max Chalunov, who is I believe, a former third-round draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, played for Rockford last year and is back with Sibir this year. So again, Sibir, second overall in the Eastern Conference, and they take on a mainstay in the KHL, and even before KHL, a team that's been around since 1947, Tractor, who I don't know, maybe, and maybe I'm not giving Sibir enough credit here, but I think, and I don't know, I'm probably going against my better judgment here, because you look goal differential wise, this is not a great team on paper. 10 minus 10 goal differential, only 21 regulation wins. I don't know. You look up and down their lineup, and they're a solid, if unspectacular, team. Michael Garnett, one of the two goaltenders. Jan Boulas, also a forward for the team. But I feel like I'm trying to talk myself into an upset, but I don't know. I've seen several Tractor games this year, and I haven't been overly impressed. I'm going to walk back from my desire to choose an upset, and I'm going to go with Sabir. I do not think that Sabir is going to have a long run in the playoffs. I mean, if you look, and it's reseeded after every round. So to me, you look at as long as Aftermobile East doesn't square the upset over Akbar's, you look at the other remaining teams. If the 6 or 5 seeds win their rounds, and let's say the 6 seed wins, and that's who Sabir has to play. I don't like Sabir over Salavat Ulyayev. I don't like them over Baris. I really don't like them over really anybody in the conference other than Aftermobile East or Tractor. So anyway, yeah, I'll go with Sabir in this, but I don't have a ton of confidence in them going forward. And then we get into the, much like the other conference, the 3-6 and 4-5 matchups, which are fascinating. Metallurg Magnitogorsk and Salavat Ulyayev, both very recent Gagarin Cup winners. Metallurg Magnitogorsk winning the Gagarin Cup last year. In some ways, again, making comparisons, but in some ways, they really remind me of the LA Kings, not even necessarily in style of play, not even necessarily in that they're both coached by very odd North American successful men in Mike Keenan and Daryl Sutter, but just in the sense that they both won their respective championships last year, and both, for the most part, I guess obviously the Kings have come on in the last few weeks, but both have had what you could describe as middling seasons. Metallurg Magnitogorsk, I mentioned Sergei Mozeykin earlier in the season. He is their star player. He is the engine that makes the whole thing go, and he was injured earlier in the season and missed quite a bit of time, and they definitely suffered in his absence. I mean, it's a deep team. You've got guys up and down the lineup that that dot the top of the scoring charts. Denis Zaropov, obviously one of the other top players on the team on that line with Sergei Mozeykin. And even when you look at Sergei Mozeykin's numbers, for a guy who missed as much of the season as he did, still had a very very successful season. Maybe not up to the I can't even say maybe not up to the standards. More than a point per game. 27 goals, 27 assists, 54 points in 49 games. And when you look at his numbers in point per game wise, if he didn't have that injury, which was a back injury earlier, I guess midway through the season, and a pretty vicious check that sent him back first into the boards and put him out of the lineup for a while. If it wasn't for that, he would definitely be at the top of the cumulative scoring chart. So you look at a guy like him, you look at the rest of the team, and not only do they have offense on the front end, but this is a team that is certainly not hurting for offense on the back end either. Several all-stars, several players that are able to take over a game, or at least able to control a game defensively. So to me, it's a team that they're a dangerous 3 seed. They're a scary team. They're a team that to me, honestly, you look at the Eastern Conference, and I think they're the favorite, even with how strong Akbar's is and Sabir doing what they did. Almost the entire team is back from last year. They're getting very good goaltending from Vasily Kostyushkin. What else can you say? I mean, you look at their lineup, and there are no weaknesses. There are no holes to me, and I've been able to see quite a few of their games. They're one of the teams, along with Ska, Sedska, and Jokert, that have been shown quite a bit live on TV here in North America, probably more so than any of the other teams. I don't know. To me, it's a very interesting series, though, because, again, Salavat Ulyayev, to me, they're also a team that, to me, they are far. They are the poster child for not having consistent goaltending, and that being the biggest issue. They've used quite a few goaltenders throughout the season. Leland Irving they brought in, and he's been very disappointing, very inconsistent. To me, outside of that, though, this is a team that on paper, and again, it's a team I've seen quite a bit of, just a very solid team. You've got several guys, Teemu Hartikainen, who played for the Oilers, who's been very solid for them. It's also an interesting team in that it's obviously a Russian team, but you've got 3 Finns, We mentioned Leland Irving. You've also got Arturs Kolda from Latvia, but a very solid team. Antti Pilström from Finland, one of their better forwards. And you look at, as I pull up here, the league leaders in so many categories, and again, like some of the teams we've talked about earlier, they dot the league leaders. You've got Jan Kovar, second in the league in points, 24 goals. Okay, that's good, and 44 assists, 68 points, so well over a point per game player, and third in points, just behind him, 24 goals and 40 assists is Denis Zaropov. So two of the top five scorers in the league on this team, and then you look at offense from the back end, as I mentioned earlier, Chris Lee, 46 points in 60 games, second only to Kirill Koltsov. So, and again, you can go up and down. Again, Sergei Mozykin, fourth in the league in goals with and missing 11 games. Save percentage. You've got goaltenders. Well, Alexei Murigan, who's been on two teams throughout the season, but save percentage-wise was right up there. There are very few categories where you don't have a Metallurg Magnitogorsk player near the top. So, I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting series. If I had to choose, and again, it is interesting because you do have the matchup of the top two scoring defensemen in the league with Kirill Koltsov, as I mentioned, with Selivet Ilaev and Chris Lee of Metallurg Magnitogorsk. I think this is a total toss-up, but goaltending is the difference here. So I will go with Metallurg Magnitogorsk. And to round out the first round of the KHL playoffs before I completely lose my voice, Avangard Omsk and Boris Astana, another really, really good matchup, and in some ways really similar to the 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference. Avangard Omsk, it begins and ends with their goaltender, one of the greatest goaltenders in KHL history, Konstantin Berulin. But a solid team throughout. Erik Gustafsson, the former Flyer, on their back line. A team that also features Vladimir Sobotka, who left the St. Louis Blues to play in the KHL for Avangard. This is a team that I don't know. I think I would have expected them to be maybe higher than they are, and they're fourth, but I would have expected them to maybe contend for one of the top two spots. And 30 regulation wins, six more regulation wins than Boris. This is for a 4-5 matchup. You compare, I guess both really were, for 4-5, there's a big point difference between the two teams. Boris is another team that that has a very, very, maybe the most international lineup as far as teams from, or players from different countries, players from different hockey backgrounds. Based in Kazakhstan, Nick Antropov, former NHLer, on the team. You've got Jan Lakso from Slovakia, one of their goaltenders. You've got several Russians, obviously Oleg Kavasha being one of the more prominent ones. But you've got Mike Lundin, former Tampa Bay Lightning defenseman from the United States. Brandon Bachenski, former highly skilled NHL prospect that didn't pan out, but I consider Brandon Bachenski one of those guys that we talked about way back at the start of the show from the Igor Larionov article that really never got a chance to show what he could do because it was very quickly decided after a couple of years of him bouncing around the league that, well, this is a guy who's skilled, but he just he doesn't fit in. He doesn't play the game the right way. It's too much east west, not enough north south. All those sorts of things. And you look at what he did. You look at his points per game and some of the underlying numbers, and he actually wasn't that bad in the NHL. But he's been a premier scorer. He's led the league in goal scoring before. You've got a trio of Canadian players: Dustin Boyd, Kevin Dahlman, and Nigel Dawes, who's was sort of a role player in the NHL and has found a home in the KHL and with Boris as one of the premier scorers in that league as well. So, to me, this is This might be, I mean, obviously you say 4-5, so it's a close matchup. But then you look at the point differential and you say maybe it's not so close. But to me, this is as close to a pick 'em as you get. And I actually think this will be, if you can call it an upset. I don't know if you really can all that much in a 4-5 matchup, but I will say that Burice will win the first round. So that rounds out the predictions of the first round. I hope this was worthwhile. I hope I wasn't just doing this for myself. Again, definitely if you get a chance to watch the KHL, do so. I'm not a glutton for punishment, and I've watched, like I said, 2 live KHL games every week, plus have been keeping up with the daily updates every day. I'm a person that enjoys hockey, so I'm pretty sure if this was just objectionably bad hockey that you shouldn't watch, I wouldn't be watching it. It's actually very, very entertaining and worthwhile, and hopefully... obviously, nobody's paying me for this. KHL's not paying for me this. Their YouTube channel isn't paying me for this. One World Sports isn't paying me for this. I'm just doing the show because I felt like doing it. But hopefully, maybe you, if you sat through this, if you made it through it, you'll decide to check out some of their games. So, in any event, thank you for joining me on what has turned into a marathon edition of this show. I don't know. I may end up splitting this into 2 episodes just to... save file size, but that's neither here nor there. Thank you very much for joining me. I will be back. Definitely not as long as it has been between this show and the previous show with an NHL themed show as well, and we'll probably cover the KHL playoffs as they go along. So with that, thanks for listening, and I will not say keep it simple considering what we talked about earlier. So enjoy the hockey.